those are our thoughts as we go forward. And where we're going forward to is our next segment. Dr. Arne Buss received an undergraduate degree in psychology at Rutgers University and a PhD from Cornell University. He's been teaching at the undergraduate and graduate level for over 30 years. His passion is facilitating and teaching classes about interpersonal communication. He works with individuals and couples to resolve their interpersonal communication issues. And in the past 7 years, he's given presentations on interpersonal communication skills to a number of organizations in the Monterey area. He's also a distinguished Toastmaster, and in 2011, he was the semifinalist in the Toastmasters World Championship of Public Speaking. He joins us on the first and third Thursdays of every month. So let's listen to Dr. Arne Buss and Speaking of Listening.
Well, thank you, Solazar. As Solazar said, I'm Arne Buss, your host for Speaking of Listening on this segment. Speaking of Listening is all about ways of improving your relationships by listening and communicating from your heart. And if you want to hear more about my workshops or facilitation or individual work, you can contact me at ahbuss, that's A-H-B-U-S-S, at consciousawareheart.com. That's ahbuss at consciousawareheart.com. And remember that listening is not just about hearing the words the other person is saying, it's more than that. It's about engaging in a dialogue. And one of my favorite quotes is by Ginger Rogers, who said that she had to do everything Fred Astaire did, only she did it backwards and in high heels. And so it is with listening, except for the high heels part. And today we're going to do something a little bit different. So today, instead of being Ginger Rogers, we're going to be Fred Astaire today. So we're going to flip the script a little bit. It's still about listening, but in this context, instead of focusing on listening to the other person, which is so important, we're going to listen to ourselves. And that's equally important. Now, today I have three topics I'm going to discuss, and this is actually a very big topic. This is something that people are actually often most interested in hearing and getting to beyond the listening part. But it turns out that mastering effective listening is a precursor or a prerequisite for effectively dealing with what we're going to talk about today. And those are dealing with conflict, expressing your needs, and then I will introduce the framework by which this is most effectively done in my experience with something called an impact statement. So first, let's talk about dealing with conflict. Now, if you're in a relationship, then conflict is inevitable. If you listen to therapists and counselors who counsel couples, one of the red flags that they often mention is if a couple comes in and says, oh, we never argue, we never fight, we don't have any conflicts. And that's a red flag, because if you're in a relationship, then conflict is inevitable. And if it doesn't seem to manifest itself, it usually means that one or even both of you aren't really showing up to the relationship. So the power of relationships is that connection. And if you're not really showing up for who you are, then you don't have that connection. Now, having conflict in a relationship, it doesn't mean that you're bad. It doesn't mean the other person is bad. And it certainly doesn't mean the relationship is bad. Having conflict means you are in a relationship. If you're in a relationship, you will experience conflict, guaranteed. What makes the difference is not whether you have a conflict or how much conflict you do have, but how you deal with the conflict. Now, there are many ineffective ways of dealing with conflict. You can argue, and arguing generally doesn't help the relationship. You can fight, which is taking arguing and taking it to a whole other level. I'm not talking about physical fighting, but just kind of the difference between arguing and fighting is just arguing with a much higher import. And arguing and fighting is not the same as having a disagreement. Now, just as ineffective as avoiding. If you know there's a conflict, you know, the proverbial elephant in the room that nobody's talking about, that is not healthy for a relationship. It means that there are these tensions, these underlying issues going on in the relationship, and nobody's talking about it. Nobody's addressing it. And even if you do address it, failing to really resolve it. If you're in a relationship and you find yourself revisiting the same conflict again and again and again, so that you could almost script the result, okay, this is our 150th fight about that night that you did this and I did that. Another important, if you find yourself doing that, then that means that the underlying conflict has not really been resolved, at least to both of your satisfaction. And that's what hopefully this segment and a few of the following ones are going to address. The other is compromising your needs or your interests for the sake of the relationship. Again, that's not an effective way to deal with the conflict. If you find yourself compromising something which is essential to you for the sake of the relationship, then that actually hurts rather than helps the relationship. So one, I'm just as an example, because some of the feedback I've gotten is that I need to give a few more examples or specific ones. So here's the situation, is that let's say we have one spouse who comes home earlier than the other, and the other spouse is later. And so the two had previously agreed to be home by 6 o'clock for dinner, but one of the spouses is chronically late and never calls and lets the other one know. Now, I'm sure that none of my listeners can possibly relate to this or any kind of similar situation, but trust me that there are people who deal with stuff like this. Okay, so let's talk about expressing our needs. Again, we'll come back to that situation. So expressing your needs is something that is going on that you want changed. In this particular case, the spouse who is at home and waiting for the other person who's chronically late wants that to be changed. And that change has to come from a change in the other person. Now that's where things get really, really dicey. You know, there's a saying that all change comes from within, and that's very true and very wonderful. But when you're in a relationship, there are two of you, at least two of you. We're just dealing with two. Two is hard enough. So we want something to change, and the other person is going to have to do something to change to make that happen. Okay, now here's a potential conflict. First of all, they may not be even be aware of what's going on. So if you follow this process of just letting them know what's happening. On the other hand, they may be aware, but in some way are meeting their own needs with what they're doing. And that's a critical thing for understanding. I'm not going to address that yet in this segment, but that's going to come back in a later one. So an ineffective way to request a change is to make a demand. You have to do this, or you need to get home on time. Now, that's a demand. A demand of any kind that we impose on another person is generally harmful to the relationship. Now, here's the thing: how do you feel when you get something a demand is placed on you? Generally, there are two ways that we react. One is to resist. So you're not the boss of me. You can't tell me what to do. And that just leads to further conflict and a further solidifying of positions. Another reaction is to acquiesce, to go along. You know, so and there are kind of two flavors of that. One is you agree to go along, but later you sabotage the agreement. So in this, the spouse that's chronically, they say, "Oh, I'll be on time. I'll make sure to come home." And maybe they come home on time a few times, but as time goes on, they come home later and later. So they've agreed with their words, but not with their actions. Or you could agree and go along and, you know, the spouse could be dutifully coming home but feel resentful about having this demand imposed upon them. Now, it seems that there's no way out. Well, here's the way out, and it has to do with how we feel about giving a gift. Now, almost everybody I know actually feels better about giving a gift than receiving a gift. Have you ever, you know, we have the Christmas season coming up. Have you ever bought the perfect Christmas or birthday present for somebody who you really care about, and you just can't wait to have them open it up and see the joy on their face? You know, we really feel so good when we give a gift that the other person appreciates. So that's the underlying principle of what I'm talking about here. We want to create a space where the other person can make a change of their choosing as a gift to you. And the two key elements are their choosing, because we all value our autonomy, our right to make our own choices. And the second is as a gift, not as a reaction to a demand. In other words, if I can create a space so that you can give me a gift, something that I'll really appreciate, then that's likely to make you feel even better about it. Now, this doesn't work 100% of the time, of course, because even as I'm speaking now, you're probably having some yeah buts in your ear. You don't know my partner. You don't know this person. Well, just put those aside for just a little bit. I'm not going to address all of them in this segment, but I promise you I will address all of them at some point. Now, the most effective way to present, to get to that place where they can give it to you as a gift is what I call an impact statement. An impact statement addresses your needs, and it gives the greatest opportunity to reach a mutually acceptable solution. It helps rather than hurts the relationship. And in a way, it's a way of showing up in the relationship. You're saying, okay, this is me. Here I am. This is something that I need. It maintains your self-esteem, and it maintains the self-esteem of the other person. Now, the rule, if you remember, the rule for tracking is to only use the word you. The rule for impact statements is complete opposite, to only use the pronoun I or me. You never use you or your, and never even a pronoun that includes the other person, like us or we, or something like let's, you know. In other words, you speak only for yourself and never for the other person. Now, this sometimes results in kind of a passive voice sentence structure, and one thing I found that's somewhat ironic is that in these situations, the passive voice can be much more assertive than the active voice. Now, don't confuse an impact statement with the so-called I message, and I don't mean to disparage other approaches, but this is very, very different than what an I message is. An impact statement has three components. First, you describe what you observe. Second, you would describe the tangible and concrete impact on what you've observed. And finally, you describe your desired result. Okay, and I'll go through each of these in detail. First, what you observe. What you observe is something that you should state in a non-blameful and non-judgmental way. Only what you see and only what you hear. You know, think of a video camera recording. You know, when you watch a video camera, has no feelings, it has no opinion, it has no judgment. It just records what it sees and what it hears. And remember, no use. So to state what you observe, it can be a challenge. The biggest challenge is to get the judgments out. So here's, in the example, a way to state what I as the spouse at home, would be without using the word you, is, even though there was an agreement to be home by 6 o'clock, lately it has been much later than that. Now, notice that as the receiving spouse, you know exactly what I'm talking about, but I didn't use the word you, and because I didn't, it stands a better chance of not putting the other person on the defensive. Now, the second part is the tangible and concrete impact, and this can be really tricky to identify, but it's absolutely worth the time, because if something's going on and you don't feel good about it or you want it to change, then before starting by going to your partner, start by going inside and finding, okay, what is it really that's bothering me about this? And the more tangible and the more concrete, the better it is. Now, a feeling can be a tangible a feeling can be a tangible impact, but if possible, it's better to have something that's not a feeling. And there in later segments, I'll talk about that more. So, in the example of the spouse who's chronically late for dinner, the tangible impact could be a number of things. It could be either the spouse at home is preparing a meal, and when the other spouse is late, it's cold, or they find they have to eat alone and they want to eat together. Again, what the tangible impact is depends, and it could be that those or something else entirely. So finally, after stating what you've observed in a non-blameful way, in stating the tangible impact, what you do is you state your desired outcome, what you want your experience to be, not what they must do, but what you want your experience to be. And the key is to state it in a way without telling them what to do or how to do it. Because if you tell them what to do or how to do it, it becomes a demand, and it subverts their autonomy, and it puts them back in that situation where they either resist or acquiesce. So again, stating the desired outcome in objective terms, not in blameful terms, and not as a demand. And what that is, it often depends, and that's where it can be valuable to just go inside and see what that is. So maybe it's being together for dinner, in which case the final statement would be, I'd like to be assured that of spending time together for dinner. Again, notice no use. Or I want to be able to eat dinner together. Or maybe it's the meal getting cold. I want to be able to enjoy a hot meal together. Or maybe what the tangible impact is just that the agreement has been broken. And so what you want to, you might say something like, I want to be assured that the agreed upon time will be kept. That's also a valuable statement if you're addressing someone who's chronically late for your appointments. So again, an impact statement, what you observe in a non-blameful, non-judgmental way. The tangible and concrete impact. And finally, the desired outcome. Now, before I leave you, I know that many of you are probably thinking, "Yeah, but you know, what if they don't go along with this? You don't know who my partner, you don't know this other person. They would never go along with that." Well, in the off chance that you're thinking that, you'll have to tune in for the next segment, because I will address all of those. So we've been talking about dealing with conflict, expressing your needs, and I've presented what's called an impact statement. And you'll have to tune in next time to have your yeah buts addressed. And if you have any more, you can send them to me at ahbus@consciousawareheart.com. And you've been listening to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio with Solazar and Kirilani. I've been your host, Arnie Buss. Thank you for joining me today. You can listen to Speaking of Listening every first and third Thursdays at 5:35 right here on Good Vibrations Radio. To learn more, you can email me at the address I gave, ahbus@consciousawareheart.com. You can like me on Facebook at AwareHeart and follow me on Twitter at Effect5Comm. That's Effect, the number 5, C-O-M-M. And until next time, remember, listen with your heart.
Well, thank you, Arnie, for sharing all of that information. I'll hold my yeah buts for December 3rd, which is when you're back with us. And so I want to wish you and yours a fabulous Thanksgiving weekend next week.
Oh, thank you, and you and yours.
Yeah, and whatever you do, don't argue about stuffing the turkey.
Yeah. It's funny how Thanksgiving is often a time, and the holidays in general, where all these things just kind of come to a head, and it's almost a cliche.
Yeah, it truly is, and I think some of that is both the expectations that we put on the holiday itself.
That, absolutely,
you know, like Thanksgiving, where it's this big sumptuous meal, whether it's two people, one person, or 27.
Yeah.
And the expectation also, at least in the household that I grew up with, of of who was actually doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, there was one that did all the inviting, and then there was one that had to do all the work.
Yeah. Well, a division of labor sounds fair to me.
Yeah. Then another thing on our household was that after dinner on Thanksgiving is when my mother would have to pull out all the Christmas decorations and decorate the house.
Oh, my goodness.
So it wasn't even like you sat back for anybody to relax. Dishes done, everything's put away. Okay, let's start putting up the tree.
Oh, my God. Well, at least she waited until after Thanksgiving.
Well, it was Thanksgiving night.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's true. Wow. Wow.
You know, yes. And my father's perspective was, there's still games on.
Yeah.
So it was always an interesting dynamic. But, like I said, have a great Thanksgiving. Actually, Thanksgiving, Halloween and Thanksgiving are two of my favorite holidays. Because I think Thanksgiving is a wonderful time for all of us to take stock and give thanks.
Absolutely.
Forget about the celebration or the intent or the purpose. We should give thanks for those things in our lives that are there and have some gratitude. And then, of course, Halloween is just because I love to cavort with the dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that being said, sir, have a great one. Thanks so much for joining us. We want to remind everyone you'll be back December 3rd. With Speaking of Listening.